Yeah, let's do it.
All right, cool. Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the BAMF Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Afferty, and with me today is RPG legend and a recurring guest, Mr. Jeff D.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for joining. I really appreciate you taking the time.
BAMF. That's the sound effect from Nightcrawler, from the X-Men.
Exactly.
Why did you pick that?
Because I am...
Wonderful.
Well, for reasons I can't really go into, I had to split off from my previous podcast, and couldn't think of another name to save
my
life.
Was that one snicked?
if only. And I couldn't think of a name for a podcast that didn't sound completely retarded, and I was like, bam! I would like that sound effect. Yeah.
You're teleporting in the dark, or whatever.
Yeah, apparently BAMF actually means badass mofo these days as well, which I wasn't aware of. Yeah, I saw some muscleheads at the gym, you know, boarded out dudes with BAMF on their t-shirts, and I'm pretty sure they weren't referencing Nightcrawler. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like MILF, but different. Anyway, Jeff, as you folks should know if you're listening to this podcast, in addition to being one of the creative forces behind Villains and Vigilantes, one of the seminal superhero role-playing games, was one of the original artists for Dungeons & Dragons. You know, back at the birth of the hobby, back in the day. And specifically, that's relevant to our conversation because he's recreating some of that original artwork that was destroyed by the evil he pokes at TSR back in the day.
No, I don't want to say evil. Well, just short-sighted, I would say.
Fair enough.
The story is that they just ran out of space in their files. And some functionary who didn't know any better and didn't think about what he was doing just took handfuls of art and threw it out in the dumpster one day to make room.
Because they couldn't afford other extra file cabinets or something, apparently.
For whatever reason, yeah.
Yeah, well, and that was a tragedy, but, you know, when God closes the door, he opens a window, and we're doing a series, you have been doing a series of Kickstarters, recreating art from various modules, and now... We've got one going on that looks like it's going very well, in which you're creating some of your artwork from the original Dungeons & Dragons book.
Yeah, I am. This is, I think, the seventh of these Kickstarter projects I've done.
Mm-hmm.
I did a couple of chapters from Deities and Demigods. I did Q1, Queen of the Demon Web Pits. It's been a bunch now.
Yeah, I would say of everyone I know who's doing Kickstarters, you're the guy who's made best use of them and really kind of, it sounds like it's almost, you know, a really viable income stream for you.
Yes, it's been working out. I dread the time when I run out of art to recreate. I'll have to think of something new to do.
Well, let's start saying, you know, there were, you know, limited release modules people didn't get, and you're going to recreate those, and, you know, we'll just be making those up from whole cloth, but we'll say, you know, hey, there's this other module you never heard of.
Well, there is new art sprinkled in amongst these things I've been doing, like particularly on the projects related to Deities and Demigods. There are large numbers of characters in that book who never got illustrations when the book was originally published. We just didn't have the time and budget to illustrate everything. So as stretch goals on those projects, I've done... illustrations for the first time for some of those guys.
Oh, cool.
That was fun.
Nice. Just out of curiosity, which deities and demigods were getting art for the first time?
The most recent one I did was the Melnibone section, only in the very first and second printing of the book.
I actually had that.
There's Roofdrac, the Lord of Dogs, and Myrklar, the goddess of cats, and there's a cow god, and a giant character who guards this sort of chaos, and a number of different ones that got illustrations for the first time.
Now, what was the word you used to describe? And this is from the Fafnir and Grey Masked Monster series. What was the word you used to describe that mythos?
Milnibonean. No, it's not Fafnir and the Grey Mouser. It's Elric.
Oh, goddamn, what's wrong with me? Okay, you're right. Sorry.
Some people say Melnibone, some people say Melnibonean. I've never heard Moorcock himself pronounce it, so I'm not sure.
Okay, well, no, I wasn't ever sure I pronounced that particular one, so, okay, that's cool. So, hey, the latest Kickstarter, the one we're doing right now, we've got 20 days left, and you're 1,806 out of 2,000, so you're doing really well on this one.
Yeah, this is the... my art from the Dungeons and Dragons Basic and Expert books. That's the blue and yellow books.
Mm-hmm.
Original D&D, but not, you know, original D&D in the little white or wood grain box. And I'm doing both at once because I didn't actually have that many pieces in either, so I put them together to make a good-sized chunk of work. And yeah, people have been supporting it very strongly. Also, there is a stretch goal for that one already laid out, which is an illustration from, I want to say Tomb of Horrors. I'm just gonna quick look. But yeah, there's one additional big piece that everybody.
Was that Tomb of Horrors, or was that the drawing from S2 White Plume Mountain?
White Plume Mountain, that's it, thank you.
Yeah, if you reach $2,000, everyone who pledges $25 or more receives a signed 8x12, 8.5x11 print of this recreation of the drawing from Module S2 White Plume Mountain.
Yeah, so. I think there's a real good chance we'll get there.
Yeah, it looks real promising. Oh, and this project is dedicated to the memory of Professor M.A.R. Barker.
Right, creator of Empire of a Petal Throne, for those who remember that.
Oh, okay.
Are you familiar with that one?
I'm afraid I'm not, no.
It was, I believe it was officially the second RPG. No, that can't be right, because they had Boot Hill first. I'm not sure. But it was a very early D&D spinoff that was published by TSR, written by Professor M.A.R. Barker, who was a professor of of South Asian Studies.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you know, professoring away up in Minnesota when some of his students discovered original Dungeons and Dragons, and he saw them playing it, and he said, well, that's really neat, but that's this like kind of boring, warmed over medieval fantasy stuff, like from Lord of the Rings. And they said, yeah. He said, well, come back, you know, next week, and we'll try something different. And he basically wrote a conversion of D&D to use the fantasy world he had been creating and writing stories about since he was 15 years old and his parents bought him a book on hieroglyphics.
Holy crap. Okay.
So it's this amazingly detailed fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually science fantasy because it has a science fiction premise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to tell you the whole story. There's a great website, tekumel.com, tekumel.com is a great website that has a lot of the information from it. But it's
okay.
It rivals or exceeds Middle Earth in terms of the amount of like languages and history and maps and things that had been created by its creator.
Oh, okay. So, wow,
I'm a huge fan.
That is really cool. Yeah, tekumel.com. There it is. I had never heard of this. So.
And he passed away just earlier this year, so.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Okay, cool, cool. Well, that's cool. Wow, you just educated me, Jeff. So
I'm working on, okay, I guess I'll talk about this to try to make something happen, but I've got a verbal commitment from the Tekumel Foundation, which is the organization Professor Barker put together to handle the rights to his creation after he passed. And I've got a verbal agreement with them to create a new game set in that world, which uses my Pocket Universe game system, and is called Bethorm, which is the Soliani word for a pocket dimension.
Oh, cool. So when are we going to hear more about that?
Whenever they get back to me with the contract they keep telling me that they're going to send.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll have you back on the podcast when it happens, but that sounds very interesting.
There's a Tekumel folder in my gallery on DeviantArt that has a lot of illustrations that I did for a guy in Canada who is creating a new line of Empire of a Petal Throne-based miniatures.
Okay. And folks,
I wrote a bunch of stuff for his sculptor.
And if folks want to find you on DeviantArt, you're just jeffd.deviantart.com.
Yes, jeffdee.deviantart.com.
Okay, sweet.
And all the stuff on these TSR art recreation projects are going up there also.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who misses the Kickstarter projects can buy prints through DeviantArt.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, well, hey, let's talk about the current Kickstarter. If folks want to find this, the way I found it prior to the podcast was I went to Kickstarter.com and just searched for Jeff D, and this was the first hit that came up.
That's the easiest way to do it. The actual link is long because they take the title of the project and stick it on the end of a URL. And
yeah.
So yeah, just go there and search for my name, and it's easy to find.
Yeah, the full title, if folks want to know, is Recreating My Artwork from the Original Dungeons and Dragons. And the cool image you have on top of your video is a human fighter talking to a couple of halflings.
Yeah, that's from Expert.
Yeah. Tell us about some of the other images you're going to have in there.
The one that everybody talks about is Morgan Ironwolf, who mm-hmm. was a sample player character in the basic book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a woman with a sword, and she's wearing chainmail, and she's tight.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this, but there's like a huge following for Morgan Ironwolf out there. There's even a Facebook group dedicated to her.
Now, that's the one where she's kind of bent over and there's a shield in one hand and a sword in the other?
Yeah, crouching,
Crouching, sorry.
It's not naughty or anything.
I didn't.
So you can find people who have done naughty pictures of Morgan Ironwolf on the internet if you go to Google.
There are naughty pictures on the internet? I didn't know. You're educating me all kinds of ways, Jeff.
So that's the one everybody's really, really excited about. But, there's a picture of a wizard casting his wizard eye spell through a door and scaring a vampire. There's a lizard man pasted against a wall with a web spell. There's all kinds of stuff. If you watch the video, it goes through all the images that are going to get recreated.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, once again, folks, just Kickstarter, search for Jeff D. That'll be the first shit that comes up. And you'll see that picture I'm talking about with the two halflings being talked to by the human fighter. So, yeah. Excellent. Cool. And 20 more days, if it reaches $3,000, everyone gets that image from White Pool Mountain that Jeff was talking about.
Yeah, that one is this, like, very moody, dramatic lighting scene of a couple of adventurers like coming at you through a dungeon door, and the vampire, I don't know there's a vampire theme here developing, I'm not sure why, it's a completely different adventure, but he's, like, materializing behind them as they're peering into the darkened room. It's actually probably my favorite piece of everything I did when I was at TSR.
Yeah, that's actually a module I hadn't heard of. So that's one I'll check out. So yeah. Well, I was playing D&D back in those days when I was like 6, and so pretty much I had to...
6?
Yeah.
That's pretty young.
Wait, hang on. No, I guess I was a little older. I was in 6th grade, so I was like 10. So yeah, a few years older, and I had Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, and I think I had, the Slave Pit module?
Uh-huh, Slave Pits of the Undercity?
Yeah, there were boobies in that, I remember that.
That's got the painting of the adventurers in, like, a tunnel fighting insect guy.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking of doing a Kickstarter that's just going to be a set of those cover paintings.
That would be awesome.
But there's a lot of adventures where that's about all that I did. I thought I may collect those together and make that one, and we can do like color posters and stuff of the redone paintings.
Sweet. Oh, hey, can I ask what's going on with V&V these days?
You have asked, and the answer is I don't know what to tell you. Things are in a holding pattern pending the outcome of the legal case.
Okay. Well, I don't want to delve too much into sensitive territory. Do we have any kind of ETA this year, next year, TBD?
It has already gone on, way, way, way longer than I ever imagined.
Well, once things get into court, it's a whole different kind of time.
There's two cases.
Yeah.
So, we're working our way through it.
That's okay.
Mac and I are trying to get the stars to align properly so that we can move forward with the third edition of V&V.
Okay, cool.
Because this is the 30th anniversary. This year is the 30th anniversary of Revised, which came out in 82.
Mm-hmm.
We really want this year to be the year when we do V&V 3.
Yeah.
But we can't make any official announcements yet. We're still trying to get the pieces to fall into place.
Yeah, I don't want to ask you anything more because I know these things are sensitive. You don't want to say more than you should. But we're just talking to a friend of mine, Jason Chandro, before I got on Skype with you, and he said to say hi and let you know that he still uses the counters he got put out in V&V way back in the day.
Yeah. Well, tell me he can download free ones from our new adventures from the Monkey House Games website.
Oh, what is
Monkeyhousegames.com. Go to the downloads tab, and there's stuff in there.
Really? Cool. All right, Monkeyhousegames.com, downloads tab, and there's free counters there. Sweet.
Yeah, technically, those are, you know, the thing is, our means of printing our adventures these days do not include the option of a color counter insert, so instead we make it available as a PDF.
Yeah, color makes things a lot more expensive real fast. So, all right, cool. Wow,
it's literally not offered as an option by a lot of printers. So
yeah, it gets more difficult. So, oh yeah, and just yesterday was Gary Gygax's birthday.
It was.
And you're the one guy I've ever talked to who actually knew Gary Gygax, so you have any thoughts on that issue?
I didn't know him well. By the time that I started at TSR, the executive offices were in a different building from the creative offices, and, you know, as president of the company, he was off in the big warehouse at the edge of town, and I was in the falling down, like, 1800s brick building at the corner, at a street corner in downtown Lake Geneva with the designers and the artists and all that stuff. But, you know, we interacted a little bit. My strongest recollection of him is there was a time when one miniatures company lost the Dungeons & Dragons license, and they were going with a new miniatures company, and for some reason this necessitated a redesign of the look of the orcs. This is where they went away from pig-snouted orcs to more ape-like orcs,
mm-hmm.
and I got the assignment of drawing sketches of what the new orcs would look like.
Oh, sweet. I think I mentioned this before. Yeah, and your orc was the official orc for a couple of years? Or?
It lasted a very short time. Mine were actually more like rotund bodies and long spindly arms and legs,
mm-hmm.
And that didn't last very long, and then they went on to the ape-like ones.
Well, at least you have to be
there. Yeah, but so that was an exciting moment for me, is, you know, pitching a new look for the orcs to Gary himself.
Oh, cool. Did you guys ever game at all?
No. At a convention once before I ever worked there.
Okay.
But cool. It was a really big company by the time I arrived.
Well, it's just, you know, knowing what gaming is like these days, it's hard to think about a gaming company being a really big company. Well, except for Wizards of the Coast, of course.
Sure.
So, all right. Well, cool.
But I gamed with Dave Sutherland. I gamed with, you know, the other artists, of course, a lot, and Lawrence Schick and Zeb Cook and those guys from that era. Kevin Hendricks.
Oh, cool.
Richie. I'm trying to remember. Of course, now I'm going to forget some, and they'll be offended. Which, of course, Dave Sullivan.
Oh, cool.
That was
cool.
The crew back in those days.
Yeah. Now, you posted kind of an interesting post recently on Facebook, kind of starting off from Gary Gygax Day. Did you want to go into that, or is that a little too hot?
Yeah, I'll talk about it. On Gary Gygax Day, which was yesterday, I think, I just noticed that somebody took it upon themselves to post a quote from Gary where he criticized some later editions of Dungeons & Dragons that he hadn't had any hand in. And I was a little appalled at the attitudes of some people who were actually like outraged and critical of him. And it just occurred to me that you know, I've got a foot in the art door and the game design door in this industry, and I've noticed over the years that artists, not just in gaming, but in our culture in general, artists seem to get a lot of respect as the creators of their works, and game designers don't really. And I just saw this incident on Facebook with people lashing out at Gary for saying that he didn't like some of the later editions of D&D. I saw that as an example of this difference, and an analogy that I posted on my Facebook wall is, you know, if somebody got a hold of the Mona Lisa and made changes to it without consulting Leonardo da Vinci, and then da Vinci expressed his displeasure, I just don't think we would see people turning on da Vinci and saying, "Shut up, you! That's none of your business." Mm-hmm. I just don't think we would see that. To me, you know, as an artist game designer, I just think game design is another kind of art. It's not a visual art, and it's not exactly, I mean, I'm not talking about writing prose. I'm talking about the game, the crafting of game mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about a game that makes it possible for you to have as much fun with it as you can. And obviously, in tabletop gaming, a lot of that comes from the game master and the input of the players, but still, there is a set of rules in front of you, and there can be good rules and there can be bad rules.
And
somebody's responsible for that.
Mm-hmm.
A better analogy may be even, you know, instead of bringing up Da Vinci and making an analogy to visual arts, a better analogy might be composing music. You know, a composer is doing, he's laying out a process, and it's in the playing through of that process that you get to experience the results. But composers get all kinds of credit for what they do, and I think that's very analogous to what game designers do when they write the mechanics of a game. Anyway, so I'm just it's been a thing that's been nagging at me for a while. I don't understand why when I create stuff in one, you know, in one medium, people go nuts and you know, I attract a lot of positive attention and respect for what I've done. But when I do it in another medium, which happens to have to do with numbers and tables and odds and things like that, that people don't seem to have the same kind of reaction. But anyway, there's a discussion about that on my wall, and you know, maybe the right answer is that's the way it needs to be. But I just thought this thing with Gary brought it to mind, and so I raised the issue.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, art creates a visceral reaction immediately. A rule system is, you kind of have to invest more time to understand it.
But people do. And,
yeah.
What was shocking me is that, you know, these are Dungeons & Dragons players who were lashing out at Gary. They were playing later editions of it, but, you know, ultimately that still traces back to that man and his close group of associates, you know, at the mm-hmm. beginning. So the things that make D&D D&D are the things that haven't changed,
yeah.
Aren't they?
The
later editions are attempts to expand and improve, but it hasn't. Even fourth edition, underlying all of it, has got a number of core assumptions that have been there since the beginning.
Yeah, I haven't actually played fourth yet. Last 3.5 was the last true D&D I played, so I don't know. I couldn't actually find a fourth game anywhere in town, so like everyone was going to Pathfinder.
There are people that like it and people that don't. I don't know. I don't know what it is. People. You brought up that it takes more effort to discover that a game system is good. And also, and somebody else on the thread on my wall pointed out that unless you play a bunch of different games, you can't really get a sense for which ones are the better ones.
Yeah, well,
that doesn't stop people from being, you know, really adamant supporters of the one role-playing game system they've ever played. So you'd think, it seems to me, if you're going to feel that way about the game you're playing, you're claiming to be in a position to know that it's good.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Well, folks get, you know, it's kind of like football teams or, in some cases, computer products.
Yeah.
I mean, people get rarely a lot of identity invested in the Chicago Bears or Apple products. And,
yeah,
that's
fun.
Yeah.
That's fun for a little while, and then I think it becomes a problem.
Yeah, well, the edition wars. I mean, you can still keep yourself warm for centuries if you go to, you know, ianworldrpg.net and just hold your hands up to the screen and, you know, all the hate and vitriol about, you know, we play D&D this way versus we play D&D that way. It stops being rational at some point pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, hey, not to beat the dead horse, but
Yeah, I don't want to go on about it too long. I mean, I'm now that it's gotten into it, I feel a little embarrassed because I don't want it to look like I'm fishing for more adulation for me personally. And I just think it's a line of work that I happen to be in, and I just think it gets not as much respect as it deserves. Speaking as somebody on the inside doing the work.
Okay, cool. Well, hey, just to end on a high note, once again, Kickstarter, just go to Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Search for Jeff D, recreating his artwork from the original Dungeons & Dragons. We hit $3,000. Everyone gets the, everyone at $25 level or above gets the print from White Plume Mountain. And we got 20 days left, so you have about 3 more weeks left to jump on the bandwagon.
And if we hit $3,000, I will add yet another stretch goal.
Oh, what you got?
I'm not saying yet. I'm just, as we get near, I will announce something.
All right.
I mean, that's how all of the additional characters from the Melnibonean section in Deities and Demigods got done. All the ones that didn't have illustrations in the original were all covered by stretch goals on that.
Sweet.
It's a great way to get me to do more work.
Excellent. All right. Well, hey, Jeff, really appreciate your time. And, once again, folks, check out his Kickstarter. And anything else you want to say, Jeff?
No, that's it. Mike, thanks very much for having me on again.
Oh, glad to have you. And until next time, folks, we'll catch you on the next episode of the Banff Podcast.